When Mahler died in 1911, he left behind him three works in manuscript, The Song of the Earth, The Ninth Symphony, and The Tenth. The Song of the Earth and The Ninth Symphony, being complete, were performed and published soon after Mahler's death. But The Tenth, being unfinished, remained a mystery, until in 1924 the manuscript was published in facsimile. That year, the first and third movements were performed, and in 1951 an edition of them was published. The other three movements have been neither performed nor published to the present day. This means that the Tenth Symphony has still remained a mystery, to all intents and purposes. The two published movements can only be fully understood in relation to the rest of the work. But this has been locked away in the scarcely legible pages of Mahler's manuscript. There are cogent reasons why we should hear and understand all that we can of Mahler's last unfinished symphony. The Song of the Earth and the Ninth Symphony are fascinating works in two ways. They reveal a man of courageous but tormented spirit in the face of his approaching premature death, and also a boldly adventurous composer exploring new worlds of sound. We're bound to wonder whether Mahler, in his last days, found any salvation from the despair that threatened to overwhelm him, and in what way he pursued the stylistic and formal explorations of his last two complete works. The Tenth Symphony is the key to all this, which is why I've tried to bring it to life in audible form. I'd like to make clear at the start that the score I've prepared is in no sense a completion of the symphony, but only an orchestral realization of what must be regarded as Mahler's first unrevised draft. But this first draft is more comprehensive than has hitherto been believed. After spending months deciphering the facsimile of Mahler's chaotic manuscript, I found it to be a full-length sketch of a five-movement symphony in F sharp with continuity from beginning to end, however tenuous in places. To prepare it for performance involved a few conjectural readings, some conjectural filling in of missing notes and chords, and a lot of conjectural orchestration. But I preserved Mahler's characteristic texture and spacing almost throughout, and added nothing which affects his essential thought. In the few places where coherence could only have been preserved by doing Mahler's actual composing for him, I've simply left gaps. But we shall hear about an hour's music out of some 65 minutes, and I believe this will justify itself by providing for the first time a comprehensive view of the whole work, and particularly of the last two superb movements. Mahler's manuscript consists of five main folders. The first is marked 1, Adagio, and it contains the large-scale movement in F sharp major, which is often performed. It's laid out in full score, and it's almost fully orchestrated. I've rejected the published version, since it contains many unwarranted additions, mainly holding notes and chords for woodwind and horns, which obscure Mahler's pellucid texture and orchestration. Incidentally, this is not the work of Ernst Trenek, as is generally supposed. Both he and Mrs. Mahler have declared that he only made a fair copy of the manuscript, and that the additions were made afterwards by some unknown hand. I've simply gone back to the original. We shall hear the Adagio tonight, practically as it stands in Mahler's manuscript. Turning to the actual music, this movement has been generally misunderstood in isolation from the rest of the symphony. It's been regarded as a kind of extension of the valedictory finale of the Ninth Symphony, as Mahler's last farewell. In fact, it's no farewell at all, as we shall hear, but the preludial movement of a new symphony, raising questions which are resolved by the later movements. In view of this, Berthold Goldschmidt is adopting a rather more flowing tempo than the funereal one previously considered appropriate. Three main elements in this movement should be noticed. First, the opening andante theme for unison violas.